This is Dave Parker of Holy Spirit Radio, 1570 AM in Doylestown in Philadelphia, and 1420 in Coatesville and Chester County, bringing to you a Veterans Day special edition of The Spirit of the Delaware Valley, Catholics and the American Revolution. At the time of the American Revolution, Catholics were a very small percentage of the population, only 1.6%. But that 1.6% were overwhelmingly patriots and played a key role in the American Revolution out of all proportion to the small fragment of the American people they represented. A number of them assumed leadership roles in the fight for our liberty. Their stories, starting with those who fought in the battles of the war, follow. Captain John Barry of the Navy was born in 1745 in Ireland. By age 15, he came to America, landing in Philadelphia. A master seaman by age 21, he earned command of his own ship. Barry was considered a fair disciplinarian who cared for his men. He was known to be a man of faith. By the time he was 30, Barry was an accomplished sea captain on the trade route between Philadelphia and the West Indies. Drawn to the American colonies' fight for freedom against Great Britain, Barry sold his merchant ship, Black Prince, to the cause. Barry was designated a captain in the newly formed Continental Navy, and the Black Prince, refitted as a warship, became the flagship of Commodore Hopkins. Barry was given the command of the Lexington and was credited with the first capture of the American Revolution, seizing the British sloop Edward off the coast of Virginia. Barry's most successful command was on board the frigate Alliance. In 1781, Barry fought with two British ships near Newfoundland. During the battle, Alliance's flag was shot down and Barry suffered multiple wounds, including a severe injury to his left arm. He remained in command until loss of blood caused him to lose consciousness. Taken below decks, Barry was having his wounds dressed when his second-in-command brought him up to date. "I have to report the ship in frightful condition, sir. The rigging is cut. Damage is great. Many men were killed and wounded, and we suffer for lack of wind. Have I permission to lower our colors?" Barry put that immediately to rest. "No, sir. If this ship cannot be fought without me, I will be back on deck." A new flag was posted to indicate the fight would continue. Just as they stepped on deck, a gust of wind came up, filling the sails. Bringing the ship around, the battery blasted its 14 cannons. Two broadsides later, the British ship struck their colors. The British ship lost both ships, 11 sailors, including a captain, and 25 wounded. Barry's ship Alliance went on to fight the last naval engagement of the war in March 1783. Alliance was escorting a transport carrying 72,000 Spanish silver dollars and a cargo of war supplies for the Continental Congress. In the Gulf of Mexico, a British squadron caught sight of the Americans. Alliance's gun crews skirmished with the British man-of-war and forced it to surrender. Following the American Revolution, Barry went back to being a merchant marine. Congress formed the Navy with the Naval Act of 1794, and Barry was appointed the U.S. Navy's first commissioned officer. Commodore Barry oversaw the construction of the Navy's first six frigates, including his own ship, the United States. In 1797, Barry received a certificate from President Washington designating him as Commission No. 1. Barry was chosen to command the Mediterranean Squadron, but was too ill to report to duty. He died in 1803 at his home near Philadelphia. Many of the officers who trained on Barry's ship would go on to play pivotal roles during the War of 1812. Crowning his reputation as an accomplished sea captain, Barry suggested creating a separate department of the Navy with its own cabinet status. Like John Paul Jones, he is also called the father of the American Navy. The next Catholic patriot of the Revolutionary War,
Colonel John Fitzgerald, was a trusted aide and private secretary to General George Washington. He emigrated from Ireland and settled in Alexandria, Virginia, where he became a partner in business. He would become a business acquaintance, neighbor, and good friend of George Washington in a friendship that lasted a lifetime. Like most Irish Catholics who came to the American colonies, John Fitzgerald supported the cause for independence and offered his service. With the outbreak of war in 1775, Fitzgerald joined the Continental Army in Massachusetts. Promoted to the rank of major, he became a trusted aide-de-camp for his hometown friend, Commander-in-Chief George Washington. He served at the Battle of Princeton. Then he was part of Washington's military family at Valley Forge. At Valley Forge, he assisted General Washington with correspondence and other administrative duties vital to the Continental Army. He left Valley Forge with the rest of Washington's staff in June 1778 and was involved in the Battle of Monmouth that month. During the crucial fight, he reportedly rode up to General Charles Lee carrying a dispatch from General Washington and demanding an explanation for the Army's retreat from the field. Wounded during the battle, John Fitzgerald resigned his commission shortly after Monmouth and returned to civilian life. He returned to Alexandria, Virginia in late 1778 to continue his business career. Following the successful end of America's War for Independence, his close friendship with George Washington continued. Fitzgerald was elected mayor of Alexandria in 1783. The election of George Washington as the first president of the United States in 1789 placed John Fitzgerald in a new political role for the city of Alexandria. He served on Alexandria City Council beginning in 1784, and in 1793 was appointed as collector of customs for the port of Alexandria. The lifetime friendship between Fitzgerald and George Washington came to an end with Washington's death in December 1799. John Fitzgerald died within a few weeks of his good friend.
The next Catholic patriot of the Revolutionary War, General Stephen Moylan, was a noted cavalry commander and the first Master General of the Continental Army. Born in Ireland, he settled in Philadelphia in 1768 and started a shipping firm. He was one of five founding members of the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick, an Irish-American fraternal organization, and served as its first president. Moylan joined the American Continental Army in 1775 and was appointed Master General that year. His experience afforded the United States a qualified ship outfitter who helped with the first ships of the Continental Navy. In 1776, he became secretary to General George Washington. He was promoted to colonel and was appointed quartermaster general in the Continental Army. The next year, Moylan was put in command of the 4th Continental Light Dragoons. The regiment often took the field and captured British redcoats. They saw action at the Battle of Brandywine, the Battle of Germantown, and at Valley Forge. Colonel Moylan was made commander of the cavalry and saw more action at the Battle of Monmouth. Colonel Moylan and the 4th Dragoons fought battles for the next several years, including British raids in Connecticut, the Battle of Springfield, followed by Bull's Ferry, New Jersey the next month, and the Siege of Yorktown. His failing health caused him to leave the field and return to Philadelphia. There, he appealed to the Continental Congress to maintain the Continental Regiments and was promoted to Brigadier General after the war. The next Catholic patriot of the Revolutionary War,
Captain Joshua Barney, serving during the Revolutionary War, achieved the rank of Commodore in the United States Navy. He also served in the War of 1812. Born in Baltimore, he went to sea in 1771 at the age of 12. In 1775, he served as second-in-command aboard a merchant ship bound for Europe. When the commander died, he assumed command and sailed the ship to France. Barney served in the Continental Navy beginning early the next year, and through several key battles, including the raid on New Providence and the defense of the Delaware River. Barney was taken prisoner and exchanged several times. In 1779, he was again taken prisoner and jailed in Plymouth, England, until his escape in 1781. The next year, he commanded a Pennsylvania warship, in which he captured a more heavily armed British warship in the Battle of Delaware Bay. He was given command of that captured ship, renamed George Washington, and sailed for France with dispatches for Benjamin Franklin, returning with news that peace had been declared. After the Revolution, Barney continued his career as a naval officer. At the outbreak of the War of 1812, Barney was U.S. Navy captain who commanded a fleet of gunboats defending Chesapeake Bay. He authored the plan to defend the Chesapeake and engaged the British in several battles. Although the British outnumbered Barney and the Americans by 7-1, they were unable to defeat them after several engagements, and so instituted a campaign of terror, laying waste to town and farm alike, plundering and burning many areas along the Chesapeake. Shortly thereafter, with the arrival of troops from the U.S. Army and Marine Corps, Barney took most of his men to join them, where they took part in the Battle of Bladensburg. During this battle, Barney and nearly 500 sailors and Marines defended the nation's capital. Defenders were forced to fall back, and the British went on to burn the Capitol and the White House. Barney was severely wounded, receiving a bullet that could never be removed. Commodore Barney died in Pittsburgh while en route home in December 1818 from complications related to that wound he received at the Battle of Bladensburg.
The next Catholic patriot of the Revolutionary War, Thomas Fitzsimons, was born in Ireland in 1741 and came to America about 20 years later to pursue a business career in Philadelphia. He was one of five founding members of the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick, an Irish-American fraternal organization. After the outbreak of the Revolutionary War, he commanded a company of militia, serving as a Pennsylvania company commander during the Trenton Campaign. He also sat on the Philadelphia Council of Safety and Navy Board. His firm provided supplies and ships to the military and donated to the Continental Army. He helped found the Pennsylvania State Navy. In 1782 and 83, Fitzsimons entered politics as a delegate to the Continental Congress. Later, he served as a legislator until 1789. He attended the Constitutional Convention regularly and was one of the two Catholic signers of the U.S. Constitution in 1787. After the convention, Fitzsimons continued to serve as a three-term U.S. representative from 1789 to 1795. Though he retained an interest in public affairs, Fitzsimons spent most of the remainder of his life in private business, and his prominence stemmed from this business leadership. In 1781, he was one of the founders of the Bank of North America. He also helped organize and held a directorship in the Insurance Company of North America, and several times acted as president of the Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce. His financial affairs took a downturn, but he regained some of his affluence. Despite this, Fitzsimons never ceased his philanthropy. He was an outstanding supporter of Philadelphia's St. Augustine Roman Catholic Church, served as trustee of the University of Pennsylvania, and strived to improve public education in the Commonwealth. Fitzsimons died in Philadelphia in 1811. His tomb is in the graveyard at St. Mary's Roman Catholic Church in Independence National Historic Park. The list could go on and on. Figures on the number of Catholics in the Continental Army or the American militias are estimated, as records of religious affiliations were not normally kept. The foreign volunteers who came to fight for our freedom were overwhelmingly Catholic, including Lafayette, Duportail, and Pulaski. The French troops were almost all Catholic, and tens of thousands of them saw service in the United States. The first Mass in Boston was a funeral Mass for a French soldier with members of the Continental Congress in attendance. Washington, on occasion, attended Mass during the war, along with other founding fathers. After the war, Washington paid tribute to the role Catholics played in the American Revolution, as he stated, "As mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protection of civil government. I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations in examples of justice and liberality, and I presume that your fellow citizens will not forget the patriotic part which you took in the accomplishment of their revolution and the establishment of their government, or the important assistance which they received from a nation in which the Roman Catholic faith is professed." You just heard the Navy hymn, Eternal Father, Strong to Save, sung by the Navy Chorus. And now we move from Philadelphia further south as our Veterans Day tribute continues.
The Carols of Maryland. Although relatively few Catholics lived in the colonies at the time of the American Revolution, the Carols of Maryland, Daniel, John, and Charles, became symbols who represented all American Catholics at the time of our founding. Daniel and John Carroll were brothers, born to a wealthy and influential family in Maryland. Charles Carroll was their cousin, also from an affluent and prominent Maryland family. Each of these men were instrumental in the founding of our nation, each in his own way. Daniel's contribution was through public service, starting with the Constitutional Convention. John's calling was as a religious leader. Charles was a public servant of nearly 30 years' service, with the honor of being a signatory of our Declaration of Independence. Daniel Carroll. As a participant in the Constitutional Convention, Daniel was a prominent leader in shaping our country. He was born in 1730 at Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Befitting the son of a wealthy Roman Catholic family, he studied for 6 years under the Jesuits in Flanders. Then, after a tour of Europe, he sailed home and soon married. Not much is known about the next 2 decades of his life, except that he backed the war for independence and remained out of the public eye. After the war, Daniel entered the political arena. Elected to the Continental Congress in 1781, he carried to Philadelphia the news that Maryland was ready to agree to the Articles of Confederation, to which he soon penned his name. He also began his work in the Maryland Senate that was to span his lifetime. He arrived at the Constitutional Convention on July 9th, and thereafter attended quite regularly. He spoke about 20 times during the debates and served on committees. Returning to Maryland after the convention, he campaigned for ratification of the Constitution. In 1789, Daniel won a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, where he voted for locating the nation's capital on the banks of the Potomac, and for Hamilton's program for the federal assumption of state debts. In 1791, George Washington named his friend Carroll as one of 3 commissioners to survey and define the District of Columbia, where Carroll owned much of the land. Ill health caused him to resign this post 4 years later. The next year, at age 65, he died at his home in Forest Glen, Maryland, and is buried there in St. John's Catholic Cemetery.
John Carroll. John Carroll was the brother of Daniel Carroll. He was schooled at home by his mother before being sent to a Catholic school in northeastern Maryland, secretly conducted by Father Thomas Poulton, a Jesuit. At the age of 13, he was sent to the College of St. Omer in Flanders. Also attending St. Omer with him was his cousin Charles. John joined the Society of Jesus as a postulant at the age of 18 in 1753. He was ordained to the priesthood in 1761. He remained in Europe until he was almost 40, teaching at St. Omer and Liege. When Pope Clement XIV suppressed the Society of Jesus in 1773 in Europe, Father Carroll made arrangements to return to Maryland. As a result of the laws discriminating against Catholics, there was then no public Catholic church in Maryland, so he worked as a missionary in Maryland and Virginia. In 1774, Carroll founded St. John the Evangelist Parish at Silver Spring on land that belonged to his mother. In 1776, the Continental Congress asked him, along with his cousin Charles, fellow Marylander Samuel Chase and Benjamin Franklin, to travel north to Quebec to try to persuade the French Canadians to join the revolution with the lower 13 colonies. The group was unsuccessful, but Father John became known to other early founders and took the opportunity to accompany the ailing Franklin back to the colonial capital at Philadelphia. The Jesuit fathers, led by Carroll and five other priests, began a series of meetings at Bowie, Maryland, beginning in June 1783. Through these meetings, they gradually organized the Catholic Church in the United States. The Catholic clergy at the time of the New Republic were keenly aware that anti-British sentiment made their canonical allegiance to Bishop Richard Challoner, the vicar apostolic of the London district, somewhat suspect. As a result, they explored various options. When Bishop Challoner died in 1781, his successor, James Talbot, refused to exercise jurisdiction in the new nation. But the American clergy, then numbering some two dozen, did not feel the time was right to have a bishop appointed in the new nation. The papal nuncio to France conferred with the American ambassador in Paris, Benjamin Franklin, as to how the issue might be resolved in a way that would be acceptable to the United States. Franklin responded by saying that the official separation of church and state in the United States did not permit the government to have any official opinion on who should govern American Catholics. He suggested privately that perhaps a French bishop might be given oversight of the small but growing Catholic community in the U.S. The nuncio took into account remarks by Franklin of the high esteem he and others had for John Carroll. Carroll was appointed and confirmed by Pope Pius VI in June 1784 as Provisional Superior of the Missions in the 13 United States of North America. Carroll was selected Bishop of Baltimore by the clergy in April 1789. In November 1789, Pope Pius VI approved the election, naming Carroll the first Catholic bishop in the young nation. Carroll was invested in his office at the parish of St. Thomas Manor in Charles County. When he returned to Baltimore, he took his chair in the Church of St. Peter, the first Catholic parish in Baltimore. This would serve as his pro-cathedral. Thus, Father John Carroll, a former Jesuit, became the first American-born head of the Catholic Church in America. He orchestrated the founding and early development of Georgetown University, which began instruction in 1791. In that same year, Carroll convened the first diocesan synod of 22 priests in the United States. The decrees of this synod were the first local canonical legislation in the new nation. To train priests for his nationwide diocese, Carroll had asked the fathers of the Company of St. Sulpice to come to Baltimore. They arrived in 1791 and started the nucleus of St. Mary's College and Seminary. On March 29, 1800, Carroll ordained William Matthews as the first American-born Catholic priest. He also gave his approval to the Visitation Nuns, who founded Visitation Academy in Georgetown. In 1796, Irish Augustinian friars came to Philadelphia. Carroll took the lead in effecting a restoration of the Society of Jesus in Maryland in 1805. That same year, he urged English Dominican friars to begin a priory and college in Kentucky to serve the numerous Maryland Catholics migrating there. In 1804, Carroll was given administration of the Danish West Indies and other nearby islands that had no ecclesiastical jurisdiction. In 1805, the Louisiana Territory was added. In April 1808, Pope Pius VII made Baltimore the first archdiocese in the United States, with jurisdiction in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. In 1806, Carroll oversaw the construction of the first cathedral, the Cathedral of the Assumption in Baltimore. It was designed by Benjamin Henry Latrobe, architect of the United States Capitol. The cornerstone of the cathedral was laid in July 1806, but Carroll did not live to see its completion. Carroll made three new bishops in 1810. Archbishop Carroll died in Baltimore on December 3, 1815. Among his writings, John Carroll, the first Catholic bishop in the United States, summed up Catholic participation in the Revolution. Their blood flowed as freely in proportion to their numbers to cement the fabric of independence as that of any of their fellow citizens. They concurred with perhaps greater unanimity than any other body of men in recommending and promoting that government from whose influence America anticipates all the blessings of justice, peace, plenty, good order, and civil and religious liberty.
Charles Carroll of Carrollton. Charles Carroll was born into a wealthy Roman Catholic family in Annapolis, Maryland. He began his formal education at the age of 8 when he went to France to attend a Jesuit college at Saint-Omer. He graduated the College of Louis de Grand at age 17 and continued studies in Europe until he returned to his home at the age of 28. The climate produced by the Stamp Act had changed the America he knew, but Charles identified with the radical cause at once, and he worked among American patriots. In 1772, he anonymously engaged the secretary of the Colony of Maryland in a series of newspaper articles protesting the right of the British government to tax the colonies without representation. Charles was an early advocate for armed resistance with the object of separation from Great Britain. However, his native colony was less certain in this matter and did not even send a representative to the First Continental Congress. He served on the First Committee of Safety at Annapolis in 1775, and also in the Provincial Congress. He visited the Continental Congress in 1776 and was enlisted in a diplomatic mission to Canada along with Franklin and Chase. Shortly after his return, the Maryland Convention decided to join in support for the Revolution. Carroll was elected to represent Maryland on the 4th of July, and though he was too late to vote for the Declaration of Independence, he did sign it, the only Catholic to do so. He served in the Continental Congress, on the Board of War, through much of the War of Independence, and participated in the framing of a constitution for Maryland. In 1778, he returned to Maryland to participate in the formation of the state government. He was elected to the Maryland Senate in 1781, and to the first Federal Congress in 1788. He returned again to the State Senate in 1790 and served there for 10 years. He retired from that post in 1800. Charles Carroll was one of the wealthiest men in America, a devout Roman Catholic who was to become the only Catholic signatory of the Declaration of Independence and the first United States Senator from Maryland. He was also the last surviving member of those who signed the Declaration of Independence. He died in 1832 at the age of 95.
Because of the American Revolution, the late 1700s stand out in human history. The combination of liberty and human rights spread across country after country. The adoption of the principles of equality among and respect for all peoples created not only a new nation, but a new way of thinking. One of the most dramatic effects of the Revolution was the inclusion of more citizens in the formal political process. The Marquis de Lafayette summed it up this way: humanity has won its battle. Liberty now has a country. In this, we all draw hope. From the birth of our nation during the Revolution, patriotic Catholics have played a major role in the defense of liberty and freedom, both at home and abroad, as we continue Holy Spirit Radio's Veterans Day tribute.
Pilgrims ride from
You just heard My Country Tis of Thee by the WLP Choir, the five Catholic chaplains who won the Congressional Medal of Honor. As long as armies have existed, military chaplains have served alongside soldiers, providing for their spiritual needs, working to improve morale, and aiding the wounded. The Bible tells of the early Israelites bringing their priests into battle with them. Pagan priests accompanied the Roman legions during their conquests. As Christianity became the predominant religion of the Roman Empire, Christian chaplains administered to Roman soldiers. In fact, the word chaplain is derived from kappa, the Latin word for cloak. While their duties are primarily focused on spiritual and moral issues, many chaplains have also demonstrated tremendous bravery. Stories abound of chaplains administering the last rites to fallen soldiers, oblivious to the fire around them, or dashing out into the open to rescue the wounded without regard to their own lives. Five chaplains earned the Medal of Honor for their bravery, the most recent award made posthumously to Chaplain Major Charles J. Waters in November 1969. Dozens of others have made the ultimate sacrifice, living up to the Chaplain Corps motto, Pro Deo et Patria, for God and country. An apt quote captures the essence of the chaplaincy. Roman collars, iron men. It is no accident that the Roman collar is a military collar.
Of more than 3,500 Medal of Honor recipients, 9 have been chaplains. 4 during the Civil War, all Protestants. John Milton Whitehead, Francis Bloodgood Hall, James Hill, Milton Lorenzo Haney. 5 during the wars of the 20th century, all Catholic priests. 1 from World War II, Lieutenant Commander Joseph Timothy O'Callaghan. 1 from the Korean War, Captain Emil J. Capon, whose cause for canonization is now open. 3 from the Vietnam War, Lieutenant Vincent Robert Capodanno, whose cause for canonization is also open. Major Charles Joseph Waters, Captain Angelo J. Litke.
Lord,
Lieutenant Commander Joseph Timothy O'Callaghan was a Jesuit priest and during World War II a Navy chaplain. Father O'Callaghan was appointed Lieutenant J.G. in the Chaplain Corps of the U.S. Navy Reserve on August 7, 1940. While in active service, O'Callaghan reported aboard the USS Franklin on March 2, 1945, just 17 days before the ship was severely damaged at dawn by 2 bombs from a lone Japanese aircraft. The hangar deck immediately became an inferno of exploding gas tanks and ammunition. Although wounded by one of the explosions after the attack, Chaplain O'Callaghan moved about the exposed and slanting flight deck, administering the last rites to the dying and comforting the wounded. He led officers and crewmen into the flames to carry hot bombs and shells to the edge of the deck for jettisoning. He also personally recruited a damage control party and led it into one of the main ammunition magazines to wet it down and prevent its exploding. For his actions, he received the Congressional Medal of Honor, the first naval chaplain so decorated. The USS O'Callaghan, a Navy frigate, is named in his honor. Strife. Who
himself. Yeah, country loved. Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful life, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Now, wait a minute. I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He gave me a crown, not good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to shining sea. You know, I wish I had somebody to help me sing this.
America,
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 I love you, America. You see, my God, he done shed his face on thee. You ought to love him for it, cause
was Ray Charles and his classic rendition of America the Beautiful. As we continue our tribute to the five Catholic chaplains who won the Congressional Medal of Honor, Lieutenant Vincent R. Capodanno, the Grunt Padre. He was ordained on June 14, 1958. On December 28, 1965, Father Capodanno received his commission as a lieutenant in the Navy Chaplain Corps. He then requested to serve with the Fleet Marine Force in Vietnam. After training to serve within the Marine Corps, he was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, 1st Marine Division in South Vietnam in April 1966. In December, he was transferred to the 1st Medical Battalion, 1st Marine Division, until his year's tour was completed, and then extended for another tour of duty in South Vietnam. He returned to the United States. In June 1967, he returned to Vietnam, and in July was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. On September 4, 1967, at 4:30 a.m., during Operation Swift in the Thong Binh district of the Khe Sanh Valley, elements of the 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, encountered a large North Vietnamese Army unit of approximately 2,500 men near the village of Dong Son. When he heard that two platoons of M Company from his battalion were taking casualties and about to be overrun by the enemy, Father Capodanno went among the wounded and dying Marines of 2nd Platoon, helping them and giving last rites. The fighting grew more and more intense, hand-to-hand at times, as Father Capodanno courageously ran from Marine to Marine to administer last rites and viaticum, the food for the journey. With a wounded face, several wounds to his legs, and a partially amputated right hand, Father Capodanno spotted a wounded corpsman and two wounded Marines only yards from an enemy machine gun position. Having refused his own medical care moments before, Father Capodanno ran straight for the injured Marines without hesitation. Only inches from his goal, he was struck down and killed by machine gun fire. 15 Marines and 2 corpsmen also were killed. He valiantly gave his life for his brothers and for the souls in his care out of his love of God. Known for his sanctity and his devotion to his Marines, Father Cappadonna was killed in action in Vietnam on September 4, 1967. On May 21, 2006, Archbishop Edwin F. O'Brien opened his cause for canonization. That was the Marine Hymn in honor of Father Cappadonna as we continue our march in our tribute to the 5 Catholic chaplains who won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Captain Angelo J. Litke served in Vietnam as captain and chaplain in headquarters and headquarters company of the 199th Infantry Brigade. He was participating in a search and destroy operation when Company A came under intense fire from a battalion-sized enemy force. Momentarily stunned, the men hugged the ground for cover. Observing 2 wounded men, Chaplain Litke moved to within 15 meters of an enemy machine gun position to reach them, placing himself between the enemy and the wounded men. When there was a brief break in the fighting, he managed to drag them to the safety of the landing zone. Inspired by his courageous actions, the company rallied and began placing a heavy volume of fire upon the enemy's positions. Chaplain Litke began moving upright through the enemy fire, administering last rites to the dying and evacuating the wounded. When the landing zone was under small arms and rocket fire, Chaplain Litke stood up in the face of the fire and directed the medevac helicopters into and out of the area. With the wounded safely evacuated, Chaplain Litke returned to the perimeter. Upon the unit's relief, early the next morning, it was discovered that despite painful wounds in the neck and foot, Chaplain Litke had personally carried over 20 men to the landing zone for evacuation. Chaplain Litke saved the lives of a number of his comrades and enabled the company to repulse the enemy. Father Litke went on to leave his priestly ministry, marry, and repudiate his Medal of Honor. He devoted his energies to protesting U.S. foreign policy in Central America. Mr. Litke was motivated in his political dissent by the commitment that had inspired his bravery on the battlefield in Vietnam. "The reason I do what I do now is basically the same. It is to save lives." None of this changes his conspicuous valor under fire or the fact that he deserved his Medal of Honor or the indelible character of his priesthood.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life. I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away.
gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died. Today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Lee Greenwood and God Bless the USA, as our tribute continues.
Captain Emil J. Capon. Father Capon entered the U.S. Army Chaplain's School in August 1944, and after graduating, began his military chaplaincy at Camp Wheeler, Georgia. Father Capon served the remaining months of World War II until May 1946 in Burma and India. He was promoted to captain in January 1946 and released from active duty in July 1946. About 3 years later, he returned to active duty in the U.S. Army. In January 1950, he was stationed near Mount Fuji, Japan. He became a chaplain in the 8th Cavalry Regiment, 1st Cavalry Division. On July 15, 1950, the 1st Cavalry Division and Capon left Tokyo Bay sailing for Korea. In late August, Capon was assigned to duty as chaplain of the 3rd Battalion, 8th Cavalry Regiment. He soon participated in the fighting on the Pusan perimeter in South Korea. From there, Capon and the division were constantly on the move northward. On October 9th, the division crossed 38th parallel into North Korea and advanced within 50 miles of the Chinese border. He constantly ministered to the dead and dying while performing baptisms, hearing confessions, offering Holy Communion, and celebrating Mass from an improvised altar set up on the front end of a jeep. On November 1st, as Chinese Communist forces viciously attacked friendly elements, Chaplain Capon calmly walked through the withering fire to provide comfort and aid to his comrades and to rescue friendly wounded from no man's land. Though the Americans successfully repelled the assault, they found themselves surrounded by the enemy. Chaplain Capon, fully aware of his certain capture, elected to stay behind with the wounded. As Chinese Communist forces approached the American position, Chaplain Capon noticed an injured Chinese officer among the wounded and convinced him to negotiate the safe surrender of the American forces. Shortly after his capture, Chaplain Capon, with unwavering resolve and complete disregard for his personal safety, bravely pushed aside an enemy soldier preparing to execute Sergeant First Class Herbert Miller. Not only did Chaplain Capon's gallantry save the life of Sergeant Miller, but his courage and leadership inspired all those present, including those who might have fled in panic, to remain and fight the enemy. He was captured and taken prisoner by Chinese soldiers during the Battle of Unsan, North Korea, on November 2, 1950. He would die in captivity in May 1951. In 1993, Pope John Paul II declared Father Capone a servant of God, the first stage on the path to canonization.
As we draw near to the end of our tribute to the five Catholic chaplains who won the Congressional Medal of Honor, I want to thank Marianne McCormick for reading with me, Dave Parker of Holy Spirit Radio. Charles Joseph Waters was a chaplain in the United States Army. He was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor for bravery exhibited while rescuing wounded men in the Vietnam War, specifically the Battle of Dock Tho. He was killed in the battle in a friendly fire incident when a 500-pound bomb was dropped on American paratroopers near the triage area where he was working. He was ordained as a priest in 1953 for the Catholic Archdiocese of Newark. In 1962, he became a chaplain with the New Jersey Air National Guard, and in 1964, he entered active duty as a chaplain with the U.S. Army and began his first 12-month tour of duty in Vietnam on July 5, 1966. During his first tour, he was awarded the Air Medal and a Bronze Star for Valor. At the end of his first 12 months, in July 1967, he voluntarily extended his tour for an additional 6 months. On November 19, 1967, Chaplain Waters' unit was involved in close combat with the enemy. He was moving with one of the companies when it engaged a heavily armed enemy battalion. As the battle raged and casualties mounted, and with complete disregard for his own safety, he rushed forward to the line of contact. Unarmed and completely exposed, he moved among the advancing troops, giving aid to the wounded, assisting in their evacuation, giving words of encouragement, and administering last rites to the dying. When a wounded paratrooper was standing in shock in front of the assaulting forces, he ran forward, picked up the man on his shoulders, and carried him to safety. As the troopers battled to the first enemy entrenchment, he ran through intense enemy fire to the front of the position to aid a fallen comrade. He exposed himself to both friendly and enemy fire between the two forces in order to recover two wounded soldiers. Later, when the battalion was forced to pull back into a perimeter, he noticed that several wounded soldiers were lying outside the newly formed perimeter. Without hesitation and ignoring attempts to restrain him, he left the perimeter three times in the face of small arms, automatic weapons, and mortar fire to carry and to assist the injured troopers to safety. Satisfied that all of the wounded were inside the perimeter, he began aiding the medics. During this ministering, he moved out to the perimeter from position to position, redistributing food and water and tending to the needs of his men. He was giving aid to the wounded when he was himself mortally wounded. For his conspicuous gallantry, unyielding perseverance, and selfless devotion to his comrades, on that day, Chaplain Waters was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. His two brothers accepted his Medal of Honor on November 4, 1969. I hope you have enjoyed this Holy Spirit Radio Veterans Day special. We will end with Glorious the Song from Harvard University Choir. This is my song, God of all the nations.